Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to live a happier and healthier life. Thanks for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series which introduces you to wellness professionals and creators offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is sobriety. Why whatever works is an authentic recovery framework. If addiction features in your life or the life of a loved one, I trust that listening to this podcast will bring you clarity and allow you to move forward with more confidence. The guest I'm introducing today is Kat Greenleaf, host of the Soberness podcast from New York. Welcome, Kat. I'm so pleased to have you on the show.
And I'm honored to be here. How are you today?
I'm excellent. And it's going towards late afternoon here, while I believe where you are, it's still morning.
Yes, I'm still fresh-faced.
Good for you. To our listeners, I'm glad you joined us. And just hang on, because after our conversation, there will be a little light-hearted fun question time. Kat, could you please give us a bird's eye view of your career?
Well, I started out as a traffic reporter in a Cessna plane where I traveled with my very tiny dog every afternoon and reported the traffic from the sky. And that was a rough job in the end because I don't have any sense of direction and was sending people the wrong way.
Oh, dear.
So thank God that ended. And it led me into a career as a features reporter because I am not who you want to be hearing your hard, serious news from. I found when I was reporting harder stories, I was throwing in jokes, I was being a little sarcastic, and that's not nice. So I started doing human interest stories, and that's when things really took off. Luckily, I was able to land a job in New York City. So I got to do what I love the most, which is get into people's houses, ask questions, find out about how their life works. And that was really satisfying until my first son was born. And I didn't want to be out of the house, but I didn't want to stop working. So I began a celebrity interview show called Talk Stoop, where we sat on my front stoop in Brooklyn and talked to celebrities about their lives and their projects. And that really just struck a chord in New York. And suddenly it became a pretty big deal. And it was a wonderful decade of welcoming A-list stars and politicians and athletes and newsmakers into our home and having them tell us their tales right there on the stoop. Rain, sleet, snow, or hail, you know, four seasons. We were out there, whether we were freezing or burning or who knows what. And I loved it. And then I lost that job, and that was devastating. And I moved from where we shot that and where I lived in downtown Brooklyn out to the beach in Coney Island, Brooklyn, with my family, my husband, and our two sons. And I started to heal because we moved here to the ocean. And I started to heal from losing my job. I started to heal from the depression that had followed me my whole life. I started to heal from the substance abuse I'd been active in for 30 years. And that was around 2018. And through the tough work that I had to undertake going into myself through meditation and prayer and communing with the ocean and my dogs and my family, I made it out the other side, truly, thank God, and started the Soberness podcast. I basically took what I used to do, interviewing celebrities on my front stoop, and I transmuted it to interviewing celebrities at the Algonquin Hotel, which is an iconic hotel here in New York City. And I speak to a lot of the same people that I spoke to the first time around, except that now we're all sober. And it doesn't just have to be sober from alcohol. It can be sober from a bad relationship. It can be sober from poor self-esteem. It can be sober from any of the things that were making our lives unlivable. And that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, and doing very good at that. I was going to ask you if, since you talk to so many celebrities, could fame also be an addiction?
Oh, girl, fame is an addiction. And it is really hard because it touches everything. Everybody wants to be successful in their career. So that doesn't matter whether you're an entertainer or not. But once you start getting the outside affirmation, once you start hearing how great you are and people laugh at all your jokes, smile whenever you walk in, who doesn't want to keep feeling that? So fame is its own type of drug, and it can be elusive and it can really turn on a person. And so after all the celebrities, hundreds at this point that I've interviewed over the years, I can say I don't think celebrity is a wholesale plus. It can really be a minus in a lot of situations.
Kat, you believe there's no single definition of sobriety. What did sobriety look like for you personally?
Well, while I was drinking, I thought sobriety looked boring and awful. I didn't want any part of it. However, I've always known that I was going to have to stop drinking. From my first drink, even before then, I could tell I was a problem drinker. So for me, the first level of getting sober was just stopping drinking, just putting it down. Now, in the world of recovery, people would call that being a dry drunk. That means that a person isn't drinking, but they still haven't sat down to deal with the reasons why they were drinking. And while I understand it, I will say I don't love the term dry drunk. It is hard as hell to give up drinking if it's what you love. It's hard as hell to give up drinking if you're a true addict, and I am a true addict. So dry drunk, okay, better that than a drunk, than a wet drunk. But once I did undertake the real work behind figuring out why I drank, figuring out what it is that I was afraid of, figuring out what I was running from and running toward, it is better. It is better to sit down and figure out what is actually going on with you. So what it looked like for me was the first several years were just not drinking. Then, like I said, around 2018, I really began to peel back the layers and get to the underlying causes of my drinking. And what it looks like now is I'm sober from alcohol, but I will indulge in a marijuana gummy if I feel like I need it. I will, I guess that's really it. For me, you can be sober from alcohol. You don't have to be sober from everything. Mm. There are different opinions on that in the world of recovery. This is just how it looks for me.
I'm curious, how did you know that you had to look at the reasons for drinking?
Oh, because it's not like I wanted to, but you know when the universe just starts sending you little airmail, little whispered, you know something's coming your way. You can just feel it. You can feel it in the air. I could feel it, that it was time. And the way I look at that is I wasn't strong enough early on. I was still pretty weakened by the years of substance abuse. I was weakened by depression. I was weakened by myself and my own crazy antics. So when I stopped drinking, just not drinking was the best I could do. But once I was stronger, thanks to this time on the beach, close commune with friends and other people who weren't drinking. And I started little by little to know that I could face myself. And, you know, facing oneself is the hardest and least comfortable thing going. But I also realized that I couldn't outrun myself much longer. And the way that recovery process unfolded for me was the first round was the drinking and the sadness, right? I really had to take a serious look at all that. And once I was kind of on my feet again, after I'd really gone through the fire, which I should explain, how did I do that? I did that by working with a spiritual teacher. I did that by going to therapy, although therapy is not my favorite. I did that by a lot of really serious talks with myself. And that was hard. But once I made it through all that, I sort of knew that the next round was going to be about work. Because for me, work is so central to my being and who I am. And so it took me about 6 years to really look at my work self in the face. And that's when I began to work on this show. And that's when I began to return to myself in terms of being a broadcaster and doing this kind of work. And so that's absolutely as much of my recovery as just the substances.
I'm wondering, society doesn't always support people who have an addiction of some sort. And that often leads to shame and guilt and other very difficult emotions. What is your take on that?
Well, guilt and shame are the two heaviest things going for an alcoholic, I assume for anybody. But certainly for me, guilt and shame shaped who I am and how I am for so many years. And actually, doing this show has helped me to face that because I have some very wonderful guests on who are very generous with their experience, and they've shown me how to look at guilt and shame and how to release it. And it's not noble to carry that around and around. It's toxic. So that's how it's been for me. But in society, guilt and shame are a huge tool. It's how we get people to do what we want. And, you know, a person can choose whether or not to take that on. I do some recovery work in the prison system, and those people are really carrying around heavy, heavy sacks of guilt and shame, because once you enter the prison system, you know, you're no longer really a person, you're a number, and your individuality doesn't matter, and all of those things. And so my work in prison has been trying to help those folks alleviate some of their guilt and shame so that they can exist on this planet without suffering under that weight. Mm.
You know, I've been looking at some of your work and your whatever works philosophy. In other words, there isn't one recipe that works for everybody. That philosophy emphasizes authenticity over perfection. Could you talk about that, please?
Yes. I don't think a person, a soul, a spirit will ever truly reach their highest potential. And when I say that, I mean potential of what they can bring to this world if they're trying to follow someone else's rule book and it doesn't fit. I have my whole life wished that someone else's rule book would fit for me. I always wanted to be classified as a this or a that. Or I admired people who could go to church and feel that by with that visit, they had satisfied God or anything. Or I had a career that had basic steps to it, like a lawyer, right? Law school, and then you pass the bar, and then you're a lawyer. Like, I never had anything prescribed like that. And it left me feeling like, well, then I must not be really doing it. I must not really be loving God if I can't figure out which religion makes sense to me. I must not really be doing a career if I didn't pass certain milestones. And then I realized, like, well, that's never been your reality, and it never is going to be your reality. So if I'm going to find my place and my feeling of success in this world, I have to stop looking to other people and things to tell me that I'm successful or to tell me that I'm right with God or to tell me that I'm good at what I'm trying to do. I realized the standards had to be my own. And once I stopped trying to hit other people's goals, milestones, judgments about what is great, I could actually really be great because I was being fully myself. And by the way, that's just years worth of trial and error and facing myself. You know, I'm 53 years old. It's taken me a long time to feel comfortable enough in who I am and how I am to say whatever works. It used to be that I'd be like, well, whatever that person says works, works. Mm-hmm. But now I'm realizing that it has to be what works for you. Otherwise, you're not yourself. Now, that's coming from, again, my standpoint, right? I've never felt like I fit into anyone else's rules. So for me, this philosophy works great, whatever works. But maybe for other people who have felt more comfortable in more structured situations, my way doesn't work.
Yeah. And yet it is an enormous challenge, as you said, to decide that you are allowed to set your own rules.
Yes. Yes, correct. And listen, I say that from a privileged point of view in that I don't have to act a certain way at this moment to have someone pay me so I can keep my lights on, mm-hmm. right? I don't have parents who have said, if you don't follow these rules, we're going to disown you. You know, none of that has happened to me. I'm not in prison, so I don't have to follow certain strictures. You know, So I realize the privilege of my position, and I am not saying that if you have to have a job where they tell you to behave a certain way, that you don't need to behave that way because be yourself. That's not at all what I mean.
Yes,
And it's less those outward trappings than it is the inward trappings. It is okay to question AA and question those methods of sobriety. It is okay to question God and church and all those things. You know, those are the things that I'm saying, hey, if something doesn't feel right to you, you do not have to pretend that it does, and you do not have to subscribe to it. Find what works for you.
I think the key there is find something that works for you.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and I think through your podcast, you show many ways, don't you?
I hope so. I like to think that each celebrity that comes on, each person who shares their story, because we have a part of our website that's listener stories, I hope that those stories can act as roadmaps for people as they try to find their own course. It's certainly been that for me. You know, I a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but not really make fun of people who say, well, I've started going to the gym and that's my new addiction. I hate that. If only I could have the going to the gym as a new, but if that's what works for them, okay. For other people, it's been playing music. For other people, it's been, the threat of divorce has kept them sober. So whatever works for people has been inspiring for me as well. And so I hope for our listeners, people are getting some ideas of how it is okay to come to sobriety on your own.
A quick note on what I do. I showcase health and wellness experts and creative individuals who inspire transformation. To help them expand their reach, build credibility, and connect with new clients. Featuring these professionals in podcast episodes and articles benefits my worldwide audience who gain access to solid information and get to know experts who can support their growth. If you're a wellness expert keen to raise your profile, visit marietsneeman.co.za and explore the services section. I offer my podcast guests and article contributors step-by-step support, especially if it's your first time being interviewed. Now, back to my guest. Kat, do you have a word for the loved ones of an individual in recovery?
Oh, yes. I know how devastating this disease is. And I have struggled through the years to look at it as a disease. Talk about guilt and shame. I'm always sure that it's my fault. It's my fault. I'm the one that's not strong enough to say no to the drinks. I'm the one that keeps pouring it. It's my fault. And as a family member, I can see why that's tempting to say, well, why don't they just not drink? Why don't they just make that choice? Because we're addicts and it is a disease. And my word to the loved ones would be that people don't want this. Nobody wants to be an alcoholic. Nobody wants to blow up their lives. It may look that way from the outside, but please, I'm begging people for their own peace of mind as well to see it as what it is. It is a disease. It is not something that the alcoholic has asked for. That said, if once an alcoholic is strong enough to make the decision, because sometimes you could be at like stage four alcoholism, right? And you maybe just, your mind isn't working. You cannot make the choice to stop. But the interesting thing about alcoholism is we don't ask to have it, but ultimately only our decision is what can put us on the road to recovery. We don't decide to have it, but we can decide to attack it, and we have to. So it is a funny thing, right? You must have compassion for the alcoholic. But also when the time comes and it seems like the alcoholic can make that decision to go into recovery, support them in that too.
I suppose it's difficult to know when the timing is right.
Correct. This is the endless conundrum for alcoholics. It would be crazy for me to turn to someone who's in the midst of the DTs, you know, detoxing, and say, just decide to stop drinking now. That takes a Herculean amount of strength and a presence of mind that a person may not have. So when is that time right? I don't know. You know, I'm mad at myself that I knew the time was right after my first drink, right? And I drank for 30 years, 30 years. So why didn't I make it sooner? I don't know. I wasn't ready. Or maybe I wasn't hard enough on myself. I really don't know. And I think for each person, that answer is different, if there even is an answer, yeah. Right? Alcoholism is very confusing. In AA, they say it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. And that it is. It is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And this is why I say there isn't just one answer. But I do think, like every person is beholden to figure themselves out, no matter if you're a drinker or not. Every alcoholic, sooner or later, at the end of the day, if they want a different life, has to figure out how to make it into sobriety, has to ask for help. But back to your question about the loved ones, it's really hard to ask for help if you feel like the world is against you. So in as much as possible, if we can try to love our addicts through it, that is a plus.
Kat, tell us about the Restorative Housing Organization.
Oh, my favorite. Thank you for asking. So moving out here to Coney Island to the beach was so incredibly impactful for me personally, and I think for my family as a whole, that I wanted to share the experience. You know, New York City isn't given credit as a water town, but we really are one. It's a series of islands. And so I started questioning how I could share this experience. I couldn't invite every person in need to live in our house. So what could I do? So what we did was I made it my business to drive around to all the watery communities in New York. And I found some undervalued waterfront houses in need of tender love and care. And I hired formerly incarcerated people to help me because I felt that the magic and the power of the water could really best be shared with people who lived in cages for extended periods of time. And so I wanted to give them the experience of living and working on the water. So we hired these folks. They live on the properties throughout the life of the project. And then they help us renovate. And then we make the houses available to people with subsidized housing vouchers from the government. So two populations that might not have a chance to work and live on the water now have it through this organization. So we're called Restorative Housing because we both restore the houses, but also we get to restore souls by, I hope, by giving them some access to waterfront life.
And what has the reaction been?
Well, very mixed. Not everybody understands why we give opportunities to formerly incarcerated people. Not everybody understands why people of lesser means are getting the opportunity to live on the water. And to those people, I say, I do not care. I do not care if people don't think that this is a good way to go. I do not care if people think that formerly incarcerated folks or poor folks aren't deserving. I couldn't agree less. And I really believe that everyone is redeemable. I believe everyone deserves a second chance and beyond. So people who feel like I feel are in great support. But a lot of people aren't, and I just shut out the noise.
And the people who have benefited from this organization?
They're very happy. We have four single moms, each who have four kids, each living in waterfront housing in New York City. And they pay very little for it. And so that feels great. Now, I will tell you this. Everyone who's worked with me, not everyone, many of the folks who've worked with me on the renovations have ended up either back in prison or in rehab or in shelters. It's really hard to get your life set up after you've left prison. There's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of prejudice. So we are such a tiny organization. I mean, it's really just me. And when we get grants and we get funding, I'm able to do projects. And when we don't, we don't. And so I'm only, you know, I feel like we pay our people well. I try to give them as much of a 360 experience as possible, living on the properties, et cetera. But when they leave our job sites, you know, they go back out into the job market and people aren't hiring them and they turn to what they know, unfortunately, which can be against the law. So that's been heartbreaking for me. And as we go into 2026 and I do some more fundraising, I'm going to focus on training folks to open their own businesses, because if they're not going to get jobs from people with hiring capabilities, they've got to create their own work. And, you know, these formerly incarcerated people are very wise. They've learned how to run businesses on their own. Mm. I'd like to help them set up legal businesses. Mm. That to me would be the next phase.
And you are so motivated. What makes you go on and on in this direction?
I am white, Jewish, and guilty. That's why. That's really why. You know, I was born in great health. I was born with enough means to have a safe upbringing. Those aren't guarantees, you know. Those are blessings. And I've been aware from the beginning that not everybody has that. And again, that's translated into some guilt maybe. So the quickest way to combat guilt is just by do something about it. And that's what I'm doing. Mm.
Kat, why should listeners listen to your soberness podcast or watch it, I should rather say?
Well, I hope it's because they'll get a laugh. I try to keep it light. It's such a heavy topic. And so I really try to keep it light. I love to laugh with my guests. And so that would be my first thing. And my second thing is there is no more powerful tool than storytelling. Mm. For me, the things that have inspired me most in my life have been real life stories that people have shared with me. And this could be not in any sort of school type setting, you know, in passing, when people give me snippets of their story, it inspires me to go on. So I would say that it's an important listen, because if there's anyone in your life that's struggling, or if you yourself are struggling, hopefully we can give you some steps to take, some ideas on what it looks like on the other side. Because when you're in your addiction, it's impossible to know how good life is. I'll tell you what, the most important thing somebody ever said to me as I was thinking about getting sober was that they had attained freedom. And I didn't understand what that meant, but now I do. When you're free from the obsession of drinking, life becomes so much more incredible. So that was something that helped me. Just that word, freedom, and the fact that I didn't understand it in that context spurred me on really to get sober. And now my life, one of the cliches in AA is, oh, now I have a wife beyond my life beyond my wildest dreams. But I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And so I hope that stories that people hear on our show will be as inspiring to them as that one particular story was to me.
Yeah. Where can listeners find you and follow you?
Well, we are on YouTube, Spotify, Audible, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts. And please do like, recommend, thumbs up, whatever the things are, subscribe, share. We are a self-funded, very little operation. And the more people that jump on, the more likely we are to get sponsorship and keep it going.
Yeah. And I'll attach the YouTube link to the podcast, and all the other links be in the podcast notes. So I would really recommend that listeners go to the notes and see what they find there.
Thank you so much. And our site is just soberness.com.
Right. I'll link that to the podcast as well. Now, before I let you go, Kat, may I ask you a fun question?
Bring it.
If you were a tattoo, what would you... What would you look like?
That's so funny. So I'm pretty heavily inked up myself. Mm. But the best tattoo I have, of course, besides my kids' footprints, is on my middle finger on my right hand. And it says, wait, W-A-I-T. And I first got it while I was drinking it was a fruitless chore because I got it to, as a reminder to myself to not pick up that drink, right? Mm. If I just wait. But then I had the actress Katie Sagal was on my own show, and she looked down at my finger and said, does that stand for why am I talking? W-A-I-T. Genius, brilliant, changed everything for me. And I speak much less now. So I think everybody should have a weight tattoo on. Mm. So that's what I would look like. I would look like a weight tattoo.
Mm. I wish we could have a photograph of that one.
I'll text it to you for your own viewing pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kat, for speaking about this so honestly and also with wisdom. I mean, you've walked the walk. So that comes through. And also thank you very much for the work you do to benefit so many worldwide who might need help in this sense. Thank you.
And thank you for the work you do. I think your show is really important.
Thank you for that. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. If you found this episode meaningful, I'd be honored if you'd share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series Calm, Clear, and Helpful is produced by me, with original music by Mark Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.